Welcome to Cloudlandia,
Mr. Sullivan.
General Jackson.
Welcome to Cloudlandia.
I upgraded you. I promoted you because you did a live in person, actually touching other human beings.
Real people. That's right.
Real people. You did that.
Yes, I did that. And we haven't spoken since, have we? That's right. So I've got a report from the field. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it was like riding a bicycle, as they say.
Yeah.
I didn't forget the move.
You didn't embarrass yourself.
No, I didn't forget the move. I just knew exactly what to do. You put it back on like a comfortable shirt. And, it was lovely, and it was, just like you remembered, it felt like no time had passed in the time between events. And it was different, you know, it's like, number one, the main difference, of course, was the, you know, to do a live Breakthrough Blueprint. I left my house at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And I did not arrive back home till Wednesday at 7 p.m. And so I was out of my Four Seasons bubble for the for that amount of time. But, you know, there's something to be said for the in-between stuff, you know, like the lunches and the socializing after and the gathering, you know, on the white couches before breakfast and or before the event, that kind of thing. So there's some definite, you know, positive elements of it. Overall, I don't mind that it was in my environment. Meaning I didn't have to fly somewhere to do it, so I didn't avoided the air travel. But it was very, you know, I'm a fan of both now, you know, I mean, yeah.
You're almost like bilingual.
I'm bilingual. But to have, you just the value of the expanded opportunity that we have with in Cloudlandia. And I'll put these Zoom events squarely in the Cloudlandia column. You know, it's almost like coming back home to the mainland to do the live events. And, you know, who was there was our friend Norman Dunnigan. Came down for the
South Carolina
for the event. Yeah. And so we had a great he's squarely in the likes the in person events. And I think there's something to that. Norman's an in person kind of guy. We had another strategic coach gentleman there, John Slater, was there for the event. He's from Mississippi, and he has a company.
Employee benefits, yeah. We had him as a guest on one of our Free Zone 2-hour sessions about 3 weeks ago. So I'm asked, what I'm doing is that people who are really on the cusp of joining our Free Zone program. So for those of you who are listening for the first time, Strategic Coach, which is the program that I have, Breakthrough Blueprint is the program that Dean has, but Strategic Coach has three levels, Signature, 10 times, Ambition, and then the third level is called the Free Zone Frontier. And so one way for people who are very, very close to joining the free zone. They're in the 10 times ambition program. I said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to take your biggest possibility. And we have a thinking tool in the 10 times, which is called the certainty uncertainty focus. Mm-hmm. And write down what the possibility is as you see it. And then write down in the certainty column everything that's got going for it that's proven. In other words, this is already working, this is working. And therefore, the possibility would just be a big expansion on what you're already doing. And then the uncertainty column, you write down everything you don't know about the, you know, you don't have the capability, you don't have the information, you don't have the knowledge, you don't have the connections. And I want you to come in and we'll put that up on the screen and you walk it through and tell everybody what it is. And then we have the free zone participants say what they can connect this person to or how they think the person would go about it. And it's terrific. I mean, it's, and, you know, and frequently the person is kind of on the wrong track, I would say, the person who is, and what I mean by that, they're doing too much. In other words,
and they tell me
their notion of their future is that they're still going to be doing a lot of howling, you know, and our free zone people say, well, that's really, you're going about it the long way. You're doing it the hard way. Mm-hmm. Here's a Deborah. And all the people I've talked to, we've had about three so far, I think three or four, who've come and visited with the free zone. And it's shocking to them.
Mm-hmm.
They've never been in a group like this. They've never gotten feedback like this. And there isn't anybody in the free zone who is being unhelpful. You know, they're all saying, you know, I think that you need a year of just going out and meeting and talking to people rather than trying to do the work.
Yes. It's a really, and it's fun to be able to look at these opportunities with 3D glasses of knowing, you know, where are their assets as far as the VCR formula goes of vision, capabilities, and reach? What are the assets that they have or need access to? If they've got the capabilities and excess capacity, then it really is about, you know, some vision for that with and some reach. Who's got and reach? I've really learned, like, if you break down what reach is really access to attention. That's really the thing, because when it comes to in order for somebody to make a decision, it just needs to be brought to their attention. And it's an interesting phrase. I'm looking at all the ways we use the word attention, right? Like, so it's almost like, because when you think about something being brought to your attention, it's almost like getting an audience with this like untamable beast that we have living within us. You know, it's like, that's the thing that we're all really struggling or mastering, is our ability to tame, direct, focus, harness our attention in the direction that we want it to go, as opposed to where it wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dean, in going through the 3 days of Breakthrough Blueprint and having, have you noticed the participants themselves making comments about the difference between doing it in person and their experience for the last year and a half or 15 months? How many months? Yeah, I guess about 15 months.
Yeah.
Did they comment on it at all?
Well, let me think whether that specifically came up, because I don't believe that the people in the room, oh no, a couple of them had done the virtual ones as well. There's definitely a richer full sensory experience of it, more than a, it's an interesting way to describe it. It's reality. There's something about the different energy of being in person than on the screen, intellectually and practically speaking. There's, you know, it's efficient and you're getting, you know, 80%+ of what you're getting, but there's a dimensionality to the being in person, and energy. And it's a different energy that I think we get into this, you know, I think there's some, you know, different things that are going on in our bodies cellularly when we're in a group energy kind of thing.
What do you notice about your own attention? How your attention would be the 3 days of Zoom and then the 3 days of essentially, you know, being, I guess, in kind of a circle of some sort, right?
Yeah. We're around a boardroom table. That's how it was, right? So it's a beautiful boardroom. And so we're all sitting there. The reason I like having the, 10 or 12 people is a manageable number that is one conversation, as opposed to when it gets beyond that, you've got sort of fractional conversations. Three people down here are talking, and, you know, and it's very like, if you're masterful at kind of controlling and keep everybody in tight, you can do it at 14 people. But literally, once you get beyond that, then that's a struggle, is keeping everybody in one conversation. And that, so in Zoom, I don't know that you get that same sort of attention that you get, because there's lots of room for other distraction, I guess, too, you know, in somebody else's environment. But overall, I think if you had to choose and say I can only do one, then I'd have to say that the future is in Cloudlandia.
Yeah,
that there's more opportunity and more reach, more efficiency, more all of the things, you know, 80%. It's I think that's really the reality. If you only do one.
Here's what I've done for my own thinking, and because we're going back, don't know the exact, you know, but it's in the fall, early fall.
Yeah.
We'll be going back to, I don't know the dates yet, because that's above my security clearance here at the
company. Right.
You know, I would be told at a certain point when a decision has been made and where I'm supposed to show up and, you know, and how to get there, things like that. And but one of the things I've done, I've taken my original strategy circle thinking process, which goes back now 39 years since I created the strategy circle. And for those who are listening who don't know it, this is a thinking tool. And it's a piece of paper that you start on the far right-hand side of the paper. And you have a vision for a particular achievement. you know, it's actually, you know, it's something that has the quality of being both bigger and better. And you have five boxes and you put down what the date is. Okay, so my date would be the end of this year. So I would do the end of 2021. And this is a year that is going to be mostly Zoom-based workshops for Strategic Coach, but near the end of the year, we'll be increasing the number of in-person workshops. And that's for me, and we have 17 other coaches. So probably, I would say, we'll get in somewhere between 80 and 100 in-person workshops in mm-hmm. out of the more than 500 workshop days that we do in the year. So it'll be less than a quarter. And what I'm going to write down is on this right-hand side, what my Zoom standards are for. So what are the five things that Zoom has done for me over the last 15 months? That I'm now going to establish as standards for performance. So in other words, I have the Zoom workshops as a gold standard of how you do all workshops. Okay, this is my thesis here. Okay, and then I'm going to come back, and so that's called vision, and there's a formula that I have called VOTA. So the V of VOTA, V-O-T-A, is vision. Then I come back and I look at the obstacles. And I say, what are the obstacles that I'm noticing about this in-person, experimenting with this new approach of in-person workshops? And I'm going to write down everything that's an obstacle. You know, what I notice doesn't, it's harder to do in-person than it was in VOTA. And then I'm going to take the obstacle. And I said, okay, so how do we solve this now? And my solution is going to be who, not how. In other mm-hmm. words, there's going to be a, I don't want Dan working any harder in an in-person workshop than he works in a Zoom workshop. So that's one of my standards here. I don't do anything more, but, you know, it's not any more tiring. I'm just going to identify all the obstacles as I start back into the in-person experience. And then I'm saying, okay, this has to be solved now. This obstacle has to be transformed. So vision, opposition, transformation. And then there's an action to take. And I'll use my VOTA experience now to upgrade my in-person performance.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
And so that's an interesting, because now if you're setting it up as the virtual as the standard, that's got to be, that's an interesting approach. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, VOTA is just a formula that I use for the creation of all new concepts. And, that became very, very clear because we've gone through a complete reevaluation of our intellectual property protection for a lot of different reasons. But one thing that's come out is that that every single concept in the program, which has been going on now for it'll be 32 years in November that we've been started the workshop program, that every new concept that I've gotten, like free focus and buffer days, unique ability, largest check, lifetime extender, they're all VOTA based. There's a vision of something you'd like to see in the future. There's an obstacle to it in the present. And between the obstacle now and the vision, you have to transform the obstacle into action. An achievement that will lead to the vision, and so that's consistent about it, all of ours. And we've gone through and we've checked every single concept we're using, and I can show where the vision, the opposition, the transformation, and the action is in every single one of our concepts. So there's a there's a family resemblance to all of our concepts. And I said, mm-hmm. well, that's going to be true. That was true in the past, and it's going to be true in the future. But this is the biggest experience that we've had since we've started the program that's really different, really different. This is the big departure, 15 months. Let's say it's a year and a half by the time we get back. And I said, you know, this is a gift. This year and a half has been a real gift because it's kind of gotten us completely outside of our normal system so that we can see things from the outside. You know, we can see the in-person workshop from Cloudlandia and mm-hmm. our experience of Cloudlandia. And then we can say, you know, there's some things that are really great about this that are unique to in-person, and we're going to enhance mm-hmm. those. And we're going to enhance those. And there's some mm-hmm. which are now deemed deficient by our new Zoom standard.
Yeah,
that has to be either improved or eliminated.
So how do you think, like, when you look at the, because, you know, obviously the biggest thing about the in-person things is there's no denying that the in-person experience is richer. There's an added dimension that you can't, it's like being there live or watching anything on TV. It's like that whole, experience is different, but it's all the stuff around it and in between it that is that creates the hassle. Like until we invent a teleporter, you know, the travel, the getting, the dragging your carcass there is the biggest thing. That's the biggest friction, you know, is having to get through the airport. And we had a situation, somebody who was going to come to the event and their flights on Sunday were canceled. Like American was, this was Father's Day to the Sunday before the event, but American Airlines canceled hundreds of flights. It was a big thing all over the country because they were understaffed. They're you know, they were overbooking and understaffed, and they didn't have the capacity. And so that, you know, you just read headlines today, travel is back now, bigger than pre-COVID.
Yeah, so in any way that our hearts might have softened towards American Airlines during the 15 months, our hearts have been hardened again.
Yeah, they're right back at the "we're not happy till you're not happy."
Yeah. That's the one thing that they held on to. You know, that worked for us for the last 50 years. And why, technology or no technology, we're sticking to our marketing strategy. We're not
That's right.
You're not happy until,
we're not happy,
we're not
until,
happy
you're not
until you're not happy. Yeah,
that's
really right. That's really
right. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So you think of that, it's like until we can, fire up the jet and, make that friction free. Maybe that's just the thing, Dan. We just need to, make that a reality.
Yeah, well, the thing is, a great human desire is for most people, there are other people who come at it the other direction, but for most people, I think that one of our great strivings, regardless of how we're experiencing life, is to have less friction tomorrow than we had today.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah,
I think you're right. And that's why the feel like that's why
whatever way that friction shows up in your life, and this can show up in lots of different ways. It's five steps instead of two steps. That's friction. You know, it's someone who just doesn't get it when you're talking to them. That's friction.
Yeah.
You know, it's poor service. That's friction. You know, you're expecting one thing and you got something worse. That's friction.
Yeah.
So my sense is that both Zoom and in person have their friction issues. Okay. And one of my clients sent me a book, very thick book. It's probably about 200 or 300 pages on your new digital life. That's the essence of the book. So I'm going to be going through it. And he's an architect here in Ontario, and he's just really profited enormously from Zoom over the past year. He runs his whole business by Zoom, all his client meetings, all his, proposal meetings, all of his, client, everything is by Zoom and everything. So he sent it to me because he said she's kind of described in, 300 pages, what your book just did in 44 pages. I just go to the chase scene. I don't fool around with all the preamble.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
If you're an entrepreneur
with pictures
and you want to get someplace faster and easier and cheaper, these are good strategies. These are good mindsets.
So anyway,
I'm going to look through it. And you could tell she's writing for the whole world. She's not writing for the not normal people that are my client base.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I love that. I wonder how this is all going to do for the jet travel business. That I think there's a lot of people who would have maybe been on the cusp or in the, contemplation of that.
We have a client, Henry Laughlin, who I think you've probably been in a workshop or two with him over the years. But he owns a business that markets new jets, new private jets.
Yeah.
But he's also in the business of managing private jet airports. General aviation, what they call general aviation. And he said that just in terms of purchasing, this is probably the greatest year for the sale of brand new jets and used jets in the United States. And he said, and the other thing is that now that people who are business owners or CEOs who have decided that they can live where they want to live because they will do most of their business by Zoom, but nevertheless, they have to make flights. Mm-hmm. They are now very, very interested in local, smaller community airports that will be brought up to standards in terms of, their ability to handle jets, private jets coming in. And, they'll have like the air traffic control will be there and everything else so that they can do this. And he said there's going to be a real boom, especially in the middle of the United States, because it's pretty flat, from the Allegheny Mountains on the east to the Rockies. It's 2,000 miles of very, very flat land, and there's a lot of communities in there. So he said what he's seen is that there will be a big building now of small airports lengthening the runways, and they've got land
I'm 11 minutes from the tarmac of the private airport here. I've done the math on the timing,
theoretically you might get there 10 minutes before you
what have you even taken off? Yeah, that's
yeah,
the
but
truth.
You would
that's
just go. Exactly I mean, it. You check and they check. Yeah. You know, they have your they. I mean, they do a personal check of your passport and everything else, and you're on board and off you go.
Yeah, but I can't figure out how to make it worth $20,000.
Yeah, well, my sense there's going to be a Uberization of this, you know, you'll just you don't mind flying with someone else along the way, you know.
Yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it.
I mean, somebody's going to figure out something. You know, somebody's going to figure out something. And,
I don't think there'd be an interest. I mean, there's got to be a shuttle from the island airport to Chicago. It's really the only place. Have you ever seen or looked into that?
Oh, yeah. Porter Airlines goes to Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
The only problem is they go to Midway. And,
okay,
So what we gain on this end, we lose on
I
gotcha.
End.
Yeah, I mean, it takes us 20 minutes to get to the island airport from here. Let's say a half hour. We're ready to board in a half hour.
Yeah.
But the problem is Midway is an hour from our home in Chicago. So.
Right.
And O'Hare is 15 minutes from our home in Chicago. So.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. But first world problem.
They are really. That's exactly right. Yeah, so that's an interesting comparison, though, Dan, to see the, to really practically compare, because it's sort of qualitative differences, not functional difference, really, you know, like not if you're looking at the conveyance of the information and the access to the ideas and the discussions and the, you know, breakouts and all the stuff that's all there. It's only a qualitative layer, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you're always balancing things anyway. I mean, since you were born and you were conscious that you were alive. You've always been, you've been always, it's a time, effort, and energy calculation that we all do. How much effort do we want to put in to achieving a goal? And, and so my sense is that all of us were doing this before COVID. We did it during COVID, and we'll be doing that after COVID.
You know, and it's an interesting thing that, you could essentially there's some digital insurance on that, in that nothing digitally going wrong is going to stop that experience. I was just reading the headlines today. There's a supermarket in Sweden that uses a US IT cloud-based kind of point of sale and accounting or commerce system that was forced to close 800 of their stores because they couldn't get the bypass, the thing that opens the cash registers, the digital, it's all access from the cloud, one system managing the 800 stores. It couldn't, that was taken down, and so 800 stores couldn't open up because of one digital hiccup in Austin, Texas.
It's a two-sided coin. The digital world, if it can multiply your solutions, it can multiply your problems.
Well, I think that's it, because we literally, the biggest danger is we have one point of failure.
Yeah.
You know, like for most people, the cloud itself access to the cloud is through our phone or whatever.
I'm sort of ambivalent about the electric cars. You know, I'm not saying I'm against them. I'm not saying I'm for them. I'm kind of neutral because I was neutral about cars, period, before electric cars came along. So I've never had a well-developed emotional. I've not developed very, very much emotion about cars in general.
Right.
As long as it's a vehicle that gets me from here to there, that's really all I care about.
Yeah.
But the one thing they said, people ask me about it because I don't drive it. Babs has a Tesla. She's got the same model that you do. That's the X, and she loves it. You know, and she likes to pass people. So there's the Tesla is an excellent passing car. If you want to pass somebody, you can really pass them. And very definitely, I could tell that Babs gets more meaning out of her car than I do. But you know, we kind of have a situation, and I was noticing in California they have energy problems. Why the state of California should have energy problems, I don't know, but they have energy problems. And they were recommending, I'm stressing the word recommending here, that owners of electric vehicles not charge their vehicles during the next 24 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
And I said, wow. I said, well, they're recommending, but in the future, can they just shut you down? I mean, in other words,
do they have
the master switch? Is one of the requirements for Tesla to operate as a entity or any of the other car companies.
Yeah.
Electric vehicles, the state of California has the master switch, and whether you, voluntarily shut down your use of your electrical car, well, they do it for you. They will have the power to do that. And I said, no, it's harder to do that with gas.
That's true. That is true.
I mean, this is a Cloudlandia we're exploring. So
yeah.
One thing that a lot of people have told me, you know what I love about Cloudlandia? No politics. And I said, it's only a matter of time.
Absolutely. Hold on.
It's a matter of time. If there's criminals in Cloudlandia, you can bet there's going to be government in Cloudlandia.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll demand it.
Uh-huh, that's exactly right. Yeah, funny to see the, I'm imagining there's a series, I've talked about it, and I don't know whether you've seen or, but there was a series on the men who built America, and then the foods that made America, and the cars that made America. They're basically their history lessons of, you know, I think it's one of the most brilliantly done series that I've ever seen. Just because that you can see everything happening and at once, it always happens that somebody had a vision, somebody saw the opportunity and moved on it. And that then became the platform. And there's a jumping off on all of the, all the levels. Like once the railroad was a thing, then all the people who used that capability to expand their opportunities, really happened around that, you know? And so I'm imagining imagining 100 years from now, looking back at this time and seeing what were the major, the platform things, the inflection points, the points where we made the big shift. And I think, you know, you hit it on the head with the microchip, you know, becoming the basis of so much stuff. And now the microchip, I think, you know, that led way to the personal computing, to the internet, to the digitization of everything, to the iPhone, which led for the apps. Now we got all of this app life. And now all the big companies are on that app platform, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you start to see now that that's there, it's kind of funny that the apps are becoming, it's that last stage of democratized, mm-hmm. you know, that's really
yeah.
what is
yeah.
coming to
yeah,
everybody.
And one of the things I noticed, because I'm following the legislative efforts in the United States, because America generally has to deal with big new things faster than the rest of the world does, because America generally becomes the place where they become bigger and new things become bigger and faster. Not that they're necessarily that they're invented in the United States, but wherever they're invented, Americans will take it and make it bigger than faster than anywhere else in the world, because they have the largest community of venturesome consumers, America uh-huh. does. And they're yes. connected. You know, it's sort of a connected. So
yeah,
if you and the other thing is their capital markets, the you know, venture capital and the funding. And that would include government, you know, subsidizing it. Yeah, yeah. That there's vastly more money in the United States that you can get behind a new idea faster and easier yeah. than any place in the world. And one of the things that I see happening is that it's the big platforms, and there's five probably that you would call the big platform countries. And these are the five biggest corporations in the world now. These are the five, and it would be Google and Apple Microsoft and it would be Facebook
and Amazon.
And Amazon. These are the yeah. you know, these are yeah. the biggest. And mm-hmm. They've been doing something tricky, the platforms. That's their downfall. And that is, they've been allowing other people to use their platform to market things. And then they'll look at a particular someone who is marketing on their platform and is very successful. And they yes. do one of two things. One, they say, we'd like to buy into your company. We'd like mm-hmm. to buy part of your company. Or they don't say that. They don't say anything. What they do is they can measure everything about that company and they create a rival. And mm-hmm. so they go into competition against their own customers. Okay. And, this is kind of greed. They don't have to do this. You know, the whole point is they don't have to do this. It's just greed. It's just mm-hmm. double greed that they can do it because they can do it. And what's going to happen is, I think this is going to be legislated out of existence, that if you're a platform, you can't build a something to use on your platform. It goes into direct competition with the check writers who are writing. You can't be both. You can be one or you can be the other, but you can't be both. And the other thing they're going to say is that they also have shown a great desire that certain messaging can't be used on their platform, and that's political messaging that they right. don't really agree with. They don't really agree
right.
with. And again, the legislation is going to say, you're either a publisher or you're a platform. Which do you want to be?
Yes.
You can't be
right.
You can't be both. So you can't be And the reason why they did that, you know, is that they push to see if they can get away with it. And I think that what's interesting is that the opposition is just as big on the, if you use the two American parties, the opposition to the platforms is just as big on the one side as it is the other. In other words, there's total unanimity on the political level to do something about the big platforms. And this is where serious legislation starts happening really, really quickly. And I think you'll see it, you know, next decade. You know.
Yes.
It takes about 10 years probably from the time something starts to, mm-hmm. you know, when there's clarity on the issue. And they do what they do and the other people do what they do. But it's one of those issues that they will not have unlimited power to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, and you look at it, what was really telling is there's only one of those companies that's even been around for more than two decades.
Apple,
Microsoft.
Well, Microsoft and Apple,
the hardware ones. That's, you know, starting out with that, but what they've become. But then you go Google and Amazon and Facebook, all.
Yeah.
Yeah, 15 years, really.
The beginnings are the late 70s, mid-70s, late 70s,
yeah.
I think. So with Jobs and Gates. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the, to read a book like Abundance now, again, mm-hmm. Seeing how, because that was sort of a future-telling book, when did it come out? I wonder how old that
was. Well, I can tell you exactly, because I read
it's got to be 8 years or 9 years old. Yeah.
No. It was the summer of 2011. So it's 10 years.
10 years. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's an interesting, because that was kind of the 10-year playbook. It was future telling for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we really hadn't seen what full like democratization really looked like, you know, at that level yet. And seen the beneficiaries of that. And so it's interesting to see how it all has played out, because certainly 10 years on, it's a, we have a richer understanding of what all of that means.
Yeah. And for me, it's things have gotten simpler and clearer, but I would say from reading the media, I read, you know, the headlines on the internet. So I'm approaching, I'm within reaching distance now of my 3 years of not watching television. So that's the end of the month. That'd be 3 years. But I do, you know, news platforms on the internet, and I just scan the headlines and I read it. But if anything, life has gotten more complex, more confusing, more complicated for most people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The growth of those five corporations and the capabilities that they deal with has not made life easier and simpler and more enjoyable for most people.
Yeah. Well, I look at
those 800 supermarkets. That's big. They must be the biggest in Sweden. 800
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah. Can you imagine that would be like Loblaws or whatever getting shut down?
Yeah.
Wild. But when you look at the, overriding, we're better and worse at the same time. That's really the bottom line of it, you know? You're saying, mm-hmm. like, all that stuff, we can literally have anything delivered to us within the very latest tomorrow morning. We get any food that we want in 30 minutes to our house, but all of those things all depend on our digital access.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go get cash the other day, Lupa and I just spent 5 days at the Four Seasons in Palm Beach last week. And, you know, I had to get some cash. And it's so odd. It's rare to even have cash now. Right? And you realize how inefficient the whole cash system is. But
I have to laugh.
Yeah, why?
Well, it's inefficient. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really inefficient. You go to a machine, you go,
exactly.
And it was in the same building where you were.
That's true. Isn't that funny that our standards are inefficient?
You had to take the elevator down and ask somebody where the machine was.
That's exactly what happened. That was exactly it, Dan.
God, I can't believe the inconvenience that you've been through since I've talked to you last.
But the interesting thing was their ATM was actually down. And they gave me cash on my
Four Seasons is Four Seasons.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's just it is. We're chuckling, you know. I mean, you just see the absurdity of what I just said, and you're absolutely right. But it's so inconvenient. But even when you go to the next level, it's like that level of convenience is ratcheted in and nobody goes backwards now. Like I had to actually like go somewhere and stand there and, you know, seek out the cash. It's like, instead of everything I want coming to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm the cash man around our household. Babs.
Are you?
You got any?
Yeah.
You got any money? Did you have any cash? I said, sure. How much do you need? And she says, you only have 400. I said, yeah, I'll have to go to a different jacket.
You got them stashed all through the house.
I got winter coats and jackets.
Like a squirrel with his nuts.
Inside pockets. Yeah. And there's the queen, pictures of the queen on them. You know, they're all.
Yeah,
these are all 20s. I said, sure. I got 400. I'll give you 400. Anyway, you know, it's an old habit. It makes me feel good. I remember when I had less cash around. 40, 50 years ago. I want to tell you something that was a delight that I haven't talked to you about. Eleonora, who's my main Zoom, facilitator. She got a invitation, a speech invitation, if Dan would talk to a entrepreneurial program at a high school. Okay. It's the high school where I spent 12 years in the building from first grade to 12th grade in Norwalk, Ohio, St. Paul's High School, and they have an entrepreneurial program. And they wondered if Dan Sullivan would talk to the members of their entrepreneurial program. And I said, Zoom. And they said, absolutely Zoom. And so that's in the calendar. I think it's September. I'll do it. And I was just totally delighted because next year will be 60 years since I graduated.
Wow.
From that high school. And I said, I think they've got a 60-year rule that will invite them back after they've graduated. If they're still alive 60 years after they've graduated and they're doing something, we'll invite them back.
That's so funny.
Yeah. But I was real pleased because this town that I graduated from is the birthplace of the Fisher brothers, who were the main body makers for all of General Motors from around the 1920s. I still think it's called Body by Fisher. GM cars. And they were all born there, and there were seven of them, and five of them ended up with a company in Detroit. So that was that. And then there was a trucking company called Norwalk Truck Lines, When I was in the 50s, it was the largest independently owned truck line in the world. And it was, they had about 800 trucks. And they basically went as far west as Chicago and St. Louis, and then they had the whole East Coast, you know, down to, I think, probably D.C. They didn't go much further than South D.C., but then they had the, all of New England and, you know, a lot of the Midwest. And that was there. And the other thing is that I don't know if you knew this, but from the 1890s until the 1930s, there was inner-city rail, electric rail. There was a map of northern Ohio, and this was one of the most intense interurban. It was called interurban rail, and it kind of got started in Norwalk, the town of Norwalk. And they had cars coming by every half hour. You could get on. You went west, you could get to Toledo in about, you know, 2.5 hours. If you went east, you could get to Cleveland in about 2.5 hours. And that ran from 6:30 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, every half hour.
Wow. So like a commuter.
Yeah.
That's something. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell the classes that they, you know, that this was a major, and they had two car companies there in the early 1900s that eventually got bought up, you know, in the general consolidation of the industry, but they had two automobile industries. And there was a man who started an electric company in Norwalk to make magnetos. And I had to look up what magnetos are. You know, they're sort of an early generator of electricity. And his partner was a young man from the next town by the name of Thomas Edison.
Oh, my. Wow. I didn't realize.
So I'm going to start off, and I say I just want to tell you, in case you don't know the history of your town, when it comes to entrepreneurism, when it comes to entrepreneurism, and because I'm talking to 18-year-olds, 17 and 18-year-olds, and I bet they don't know much history.
No, I bet you're right. I mean, that was funny that you know, Philip, we were during quarantine when he was homeschooling. That was, you know, we were watching this series at lunch. We watched a different episode, and he went back to school. And in his history class, one of the assignments or one of the things they were doing was watching this series, or a few of the episodes of this series. So he had like a jump start on everything. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, that it's really interesting. The disappearance of historical knowledge is really, you know, it's a phenomenon that happened, you know, I mean, it's, certainly happened completely in my lifetime, because you were, you know, you were marinated in history and geography and politics. And now it's just really interesting to me. Of course, we're the people who know the most history, because up until, you know, schooling actually started in the
1800s. Nobody is.
Hardly anybody really knew history, you know, nobody.
Oral, and all the stories.
Well, and you couldn't see videos, and you couldn't read, you know, so we probably generally know more history than they did,
I mean, you know, you look at this, it's so amazing. It dawns on me, I was doing a lot of, one of my favorite things to do is just to think, you know, just to like, not with my journal, not in any directed thing, but observing and thinking. And I was realizing how much of, if you just really take where we are right now, like looking back, you know, in the grand scheme of the history of mankind, this, where we, the last 200 years, let's say, where all of the development has happened, is really just like a blip, a micro, you know, moment in the grand scheme of how long we've been around, right? And you realize now, like,
they're as distinct from, let's say, humans, distinct from Neanderthals and Denisovans. You know, there are all these other basically human-like creatures. It's at least 200,000 years. It's at least 200,000 years since we've been distinct from them. And it's probably been about 1.5 million since there were human-like as opposed to ape-like creatures.
Right.
Yeah.
But even you think 2,000, you think back to, you know, the philosophers at the Agora sitting in the talking and having conversations or whatever. It's a great things. But when you realize how much of what we do, how much of our society is really like just made up stuff that's not really any, I mean, you look at what we do, and you've built an amazing company and empire, let's call it, on people paying you money to come and think about their thinking. Like, what an amazing
Ding.
But I mean, really, you know, it's
the little ones are listening.
I mean, it's just so.
Well, what do you do? What do you do?
I mean, that's really it, right? Like, that's, and then when they're thinking about that thinking, then we come and come see me and we'll talk about how to tell the other people about what you've thought in a way that makes them give you money to do what you do.
We're lucky souls, you and I.
We really are. And as a society, I mean, it's just so, you realize you say these things, like, you look back and you chuckling at me saying how inconvenient it was to get cash. And when you think back in the, compared to lugging around your chickens and donkeys to trade things for at all times, it's gotta be a
now I go
life.
To a bank
life
teller.
Is amazing. What a life
I'm
we
going
live.
Going to a bank teller. I can't remember the last time I was in a bank.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. Well, you know, but you know, the thing is that there's one of the things, it's kind of like the Jeff Bezos thing, so what doesn't change, you know, because you can build the future on what will be the same 10 years from now, you know.
That's the truth. Yeah.
You know, so I think that, you got to choose one or the other of two possibilities for being an entrepreneur. One, things that will never change, but they'll continue to grow. You know, in other words, they don't change, but there will be more people in the future who are willing to pay for this, or be on completely on top of change and be the change master.
Yeah.
In other words, be the, you know, like you're almost, you know, you're changing, but you're a culture maker. You're an influencer and everything, and you have to be on top of everything, and you have to be, giving people new stuff every single day. And both of them are completely viable entrepreneurial models. I think anything in the middle is less good because it doesn't change all the time, but it's going to be disrupted by changes that it didn't notice.
Well, strategic thinking for entrepreneurs is never going to go out of style. We got that going for us. Yeah.
Well, there's more of them. They're making more of them.
Yeah.
And, it's really. Yeah, I'm reading all the court cases that went on between roughly 1760. And 1776, so this would be a 15-year period, 1661 1761, 1776, 15 years.
Yeah.
In the colonies, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and everything. Of objecting to what the British government was doing. And for the most part, these would be court cases that the colonies, people like John Adams and Jefferson and Madison, they were bringing that they weren't being treated properly. The government, first of all, they suspected the government in London of being ignorant. They don't understand what life is like in colonies. We're just as smart as you are. We read as much as you do. We talk about things the same way you do. But you don't take us into account when you're making your laws. And we want you to know that this is not heading in a good direction as far as you're concerned.
Right.
Yeah, but it's really interesting. It's really interesting to read these.
How did you even think to, like, what prompted that line of investigation?
Book review. I just came across a book, you know, that's
oh, okay.
Somebody said, really, and it's and the title of the book is called The Words That Made Us.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's really good. I mean, it's really incredibly articulate. These were incredibly articulate people. I mean, and everybody read newspapers. Newspapers were the social media of the day.
Yeah,
You know, and hundreds and hundreds of printers were pumping out pamphlets.
Newspapers, yeah, that was. There's the platform. That's a perfect example of the roots of, you know, from Gutenberg, that when Gutenberg created all of the press, that now that was the first sort of the newspapers were the first sort of beneficiary, build on that platform.
Well, not only that, but it's the first right that people have in the United States that is protected by the Constitution. First Amendment is freedom of speech in any form, and that's being, you know, it's being tampered with right now. People are that's why it's not heading in a good direction for the big platforms, because they're not fundamentally understanding how important this is.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Well, another are we done? Oh my goodness, Dan. Yeah. Oh, we're 8 minutes over. Look at us. I lose all track. All right. Well,
there's
nice to be back. Yeah, we skipped. Yes. We had a week off, so.
Yeah.
But I'll
see you next week.
Back
and
in our
you'll be in Chicago pretty soon.
<We're trapped. laughs> Fingers crossed. That's right. Oh, yeah, I'll be in Chicago in not this week, next week, right? Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited good about that.
All right.
Okay, Dan. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.